You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty. Reach me on the phone, 335-2207, on the web, www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. I spent some time going over the old website and got all the audios linked from all the previous shows for the last couple years. So you could download those and listen on previous shows. The KZUU online stream is now running. Listen to your favorite shows from anywhere on planet Earth. As long as you have an internet connection, just visit www.kzuu.org. Click on listen online link and we will take care of the rest. The high school equivalency program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haystay at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Hall, rooms 21 to 23. For more information, volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for driver and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers receive hands-on training. Cars, gas, and insurance are provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. To sign up, come by the Women Resource Center, Wilson Hall, room 8. Call 335-6849. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, room 126B, or fill out a form online located at the staff button and email it to PSA@KZUU.org. For more information, call our office, 335-2208. Like I said before, now that the stream's up and running, I plan on doing some actual talk format today. There's a whole bunch of things that I've been sort of saving to talk about, and for the rest of the semester, I probably have enough material just for that. But there's always new things up and coming, and I'll try to discuss some of those too. Don't forget, tomorrow you've got to vote, and stay tuned. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM. This is the PES. We got the transmitter up and running now. It was down for a tiny bit there. Now that it's up and running, I want to play one more Reverend song. The favorite of the PES, the Reverend. Reverend Horton Heat. The Reverend. Reverend Horton Heat on KZUU 90.7 FM. Once again, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Well, let's see here. We've got so much to cover. The transmitter's back on. That's so exciting news there. So I'm going to have to celebrate that somehow. Maybe tonight after the show's done, we'll stop by the Coug and have a burger or something like that. Alrighty. So many things to talk about. So little time. Sorry about the extra delay getting on the air today. We had a couple things I had to take care of. We got a new programming log I was filling out, plus the whole transmitter problem I had to deal with. So now that we're up and running, let's go ahead and have some fun on the PES today. So, gosh, where do I start? How about this? It's sort of more current. NBC is doing some initiative to be more green. And what cracked me up is they had a guy down at the Antarctica, I believe is where he was. But anyway, he was at like one of the ice caps. He was in Greenland, I believe. Anyway, the point is that he's at this one glacier that's like the fastest moving glacier on Earth, and it's starting to melt a lot quicker than they ever thought it was going to. So they send airplanes up there full of people and do their transmissions from the from the glacier itself and everything. And it was sort of funny because I was thinking to myself, I'm like, so they're trying to raise awareness by spewing what they say, the carbon dioxide all over the atmosphere by flying people around to broadcast live from these places. That makes a lot of sense. But I found out that in order to offset that, they're buying the carbon offsets. And I just started shaking my head even more. It's like, why not just throw your money out the window? Maybe somebody will pick it up. Or why not buy a couple trees yourself and plant them? I mean, that whole carbon offset thing is such a joke to begin with. And then to sit here and send planes all over the place and think that by buying these carbon offsets, you're making everything better. It's like the bottom line is those who preach this sort of those who are preaching this situation where within a number of years, you know, the Earth is going to heat even more and the ocean currents are going to change, which is going to change weather dramatically. And We're going to have this horrible drought everywhere and hurricanes that make Hurricane Katrina look like it was just a summer swelter. It's silly that those who are saying this kind of thing are not the ones who are leading by example. And that was always one of the things that you learn as a leader. You lead by example. And when I say that, to lead by example, it would be good to say, get a smaller house and not use as much energy as 10 houses. I mean, that would be a good way to lead by example. Have a smaller footprint out there. But it's funny that some of these people who advocate all this horrible stuff going on, they aren't downgrading their own selves. They're trying to downgrade everybody else. And in order for them to feel better about what they're doing, is some of them are buying quote unquote carbon offsets, which essentially is a self tax on energy consumption. So they feel better about the fact they're consuming copious amounts of energy by putting money into these quote unquote green organizations that sell these carbon offsets. And the idea is that the money used for that will go into alternative energy sources such as wind power and planting trees and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, some of these companies actually are owned by some of those who are advocating that you buy these to begin with. And so it's almost like you're taking money out of one pocket and put it into the other pocket, and you're using more energy than a ton of other people combined. And everything's okay? No. If you're really that concerned about all this stuff, maybe you, like I said, lead by example. Start by looking at the guy in the mirror. Say, I've got to do something first. If I'm not going to change my ways, how can I expect other people to change their ways? Or is this more of a way of just earning money, using this as a scare tactic? Because by golly, let's not use names, but I'm sure everybody knows who I'd be talking about. Making movies, selling DVDs, going all over the place, giving speeches, living in a humongous house that is larger than most people live in, yet nothing is being done to decrease what he uses, though he definitely tries to get everybody else to decrease. Well, anyway, I'm at the NBC website, and I'm like, come on, what is this green initiative all about? I mean, they're even doing the football game with all the, quote-unquote, all the studio lights off, with just a couple candles in order to light it up, and that's part of their way of being green. And it's like, you guys, just do your football broadcast or don't do your football broadcast, but don't sit here and try to push all sorts of politically correct stuff on us, the viewer. So while I was at the NBC website, they have videos on different green causes. And what was interesting is one of them, there's one of the soap operas is going to be having a quote-unquote green wedding. So they said, you know, click on this link to watch the back scenes making of this green wedding to learn. So I'm like, okay, I'm really curious what kind of things they're going to do to make a wedding green. So I said, okay, I'll watch this. I start watching, and it was just like they're talking about the wedding dress the person was going to wear, the hairstyle, and I'm like, and this is green how? Oh, that's right. They're not using as many things in her hair, therefore it's going to be more green. Now, shouldn't people who want everything to be a lot more green and concerned about the earth, shouldn't they like stop showering? Maybe shower once a month or take a bath once a month or something like that, where they're not wasting all this water in a shower every single day. Think about all that water every single day that they use to wash themselves up. Think about how much they could save every single year if every one of those people who believe that stopped taking showers except for maybe once a month. And yeah, definitely stop wearing deodorant because, you know, I mean, I'm sure some of that stuff is tested on animals or, you know, gosh, they're made in plastic containers that you throw away and they fill the landfills. So if you stop using deodorant and you stop using soap, you're going to stop polluting the earth as well. And if you stop taking showers, by golly, we're going to use less water. There's so many things you could do. Stop shaving. You know, just grow out really long beards. Don't ever cut your hair anymore because, you know, if you don't cut your hair, you let it grow out, maybe throw some dreadlocks in there. You don't have to wash your hair anymore. And that takes a lot of time, too. I mean, there's so many things these people could do if they really wanted to be green. But I don't know if that's really their whole goal in life. I don't know if it's more of a money-making scheme or what. If they were really as scared as they talk about, and if they're really convinced as they try to convince everybody else, why aren't they making huge changes in their lives and leading the way, showing us how to do it? Anyway, The website also talked about lawnmowers. Now, there's been a lot of information about gas-powered lawnmowers and how gas-powered lawnmowers are very, very polluting. More polluting than most automobiles is what the EPA says. As a matter of fact, the EPA estimates 54 million people a year mow their lawns with gas-powered lawnmowers using 800 million gallons of gas every single year mowing lawns. And I was that's a really big number. That 800 million gallons a year mowing lawns. So they suggest there's a lot of things you can do. You can do something different with your yard. They also talk about when you mow your lawn, keep the grass about 3.5 inches long versus keeping it a lot shorter, which that helps with as far as keeping the soil from evaporating as much water, so you don't have to water as much. So that, you know, then they also talk about putting in areas of less needed, I guess, plants that need less water. There's actually one website that talked about leaving an area of your yard unmowed. That way, you're mowing less lawn. And the bonus from that is by that longer grass, all sorts of animals can use that as a natural habitat. Butterflies and that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, butterflies, neato. I'm going to do that now. Well, I'm just going to stop mowing my lawn. And when my neighbors complain with me, I'll just be like, hey, I'm being environmentally conscious here. I'm trying to give habitat to the poor little animals and the critters that need it. And I'm not using a gas-powered lawnmower that is polluting this earth that we live on. I am doing my part. What are you doing? No. Well, I'm not going to do that, as a matter of fact. I recently, when I had a riding lawnmower and a push mower when I lived at my old house. And when I moved to my new house and I sold my old house, I decided to leave the lawnmower and the push mower as part of the house package because I had no room to store the riding lawnmower. I really didn't have a need for a push lawnmower because I was living in an apartment. So, and my goal was to live there for a couple years and work on getting out of debt and doing, you know, all the good things in life. And then I was going to turn around and buy a house. Well, guess what? Less than 3 months after living in the apartment, I decided to buy a house. Well, the place that I got had a small amount of lawn, not a huge area. And then I was like, oh, man, now I need a lawnmower again. And I just gave mine away. So now what am I going to do? I can go out and buy one, but by golly, they are pretty expensive. You know, a good gas mower, I mean, I suppose you could go to a garage sale or something like that and find one cheaper, but you buy a new gas lawnmower, you know, you're looking a couple $100. If you want to be more environmentally conscious, you can buy an electric lawnmower, which costs a couple hundred on top of what a gas costs. And the one thing about that I'm just really curious about as far as being environmentally conscious with electric lawnmowers, you have to charge those batteries somehow. So the energy is being created somewhere else. Now, where is that energy being created? Is it being created by coal power plants? Is it being created by hydroelectric dams? I mean, where are we creating this power at? And my question would be then, is doing an electric lawnmower that much more environmentally sound than a gas lawnmower insofar as the fact that you still have to somehow power the lawnmower? You still have to get power to it somehow. It's not like electrons say, oh, look at that. There's a battery inside of that gas lawnmower, or that power, the electric lawnmower. And I'm going to be environmentally conscious electron, and I'm just going to go into that battery, and then he's going to use me, and I'll just go back out into somewhere else, and then when he's done, I'll just go right back in. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to get power to the lawnmower somehow. Now, you would argue, well, most of your power generation things, whether it's a power plant or hydroelectric or whatever else, most of those are going to have less of an environmental impact than a gas lawnmower has. That might be the case, but you are still affecting the environment, are you not? I mean, if that's your whole goal in life is to stop affecting it, why are you getting an electric lawnmower? All you're doing is paying a lot more money, having big, huge batteries that you're going to somehow have to replace later on, and then what are you going to do with those big, huge batteries that you replace? The best option, I believe, if you still want to keep a lawn cut, would be an actual push lawnmower. How liberal of me, isn't it? Well, anyway, I will get back to there in a minute. So the whole idea of using the hydroelectric dams. I'm just sort of curious because there's so many people that want to breach dams and everything like that, so the salmon can go, which would then decrease that amount of energy coming out of the dams. So then what? Where are we going to get our power then? Are we going to put up new nuclear plants? Are people going to let us put up new nuclear plants without spending 20 years going through environmental regulations? I don't know. So anyway, you buy yourself a push lawnmower. Now your push lawnmower isn't going to use any gas. The only environmental impact of using that is when the item is mined, because it's usually metal, when it's created, when it's shipped, and when you go to buy it. There's all that. But once that's done, you know, you could argue, well, you're going to have that no matter what kind of mower you get. Sure, why not? So you get your push lawnmower. And if you're on the conservative side and you get a push lawnmower, you might be a little concerned that your neighbors might think that you're going a little left wing on them. Well, what you can do, what I would suggest you do, is get an NRA sticker and put it on your lawnmower. That way, if anybody ever asks, say, no, I got an NRA sticker, therefore I'm still showing my conservative roots. I only got a push mower, and then you can give them the reasons why. Well, here are my reasons why I actually got a push mower. And I did buy a push mower, and I didn't buy it for environmental concerns, believe it or not. And I bought it for the reason that it's small and compact, so I can actually hang it on the wall and have it totally out of the way. The area of my lawn that actually gets mowed is I have a strip on the side of the house that's about not even 5 feet wide, and that's about 30 feet long. And in the backyard, I have about a 10 by 10 area. So just by describing that, you can see I have a very small amount of lawn that actually needs to get mowed. So to buy a $200 or $300 piece of equipment, and if I didn't get this one, I would have got a gas lawnmower. I wouldn't have got an electric one, so I would have got a gas lawnmower. But a gas lawnmower takes up a lot of space in your garage, and when you have a limited amount of space in your garage, you need to use it wisely. And in my mind, having a gas-powered lawnmower for mowing something of, say, 250 square feet is not a good use of your space. So in my view, using a push mower was a much better use of my space because I can hang it up on the wall and it's totally out of the way. Plus, when I was a little kid, my friend's dad had one of those, and I always thought it was really neat, so I just went ahead and bought one. It's definitely, and I do find there are issues with having a push lawnmower. One of the things I find is that typically I have to go across, I usually have to more or less mow it twice. I go across it once, and I go across it a second time, sometimes a third time, because what you'll find is that not all of the grass gets cut the first time through. So you have to go across it a couple times. And there's certain kinds of weeds and whatnot that will get into your lawn that just don't want to get cut with this particular thing. And you can go over it several times and it just doesn't cut very well. The overall final product is actually not too shabby. I mean, you can definitely tell the difference after you've mowed your lawn. It definitely does look nicer when it's all said and done. One of the things that they talk about is with these kind of push mowers, you actually don't get a perfectly even cut like you do with a gas-powered mower. Gas-powered mower, if you set it to 2 inches, your grass is going to be 2 inches straight out throughout. With a push mower, you can set it to about 2 inches, but what happens is because it's cutting and ripping the grass, it's not... And you know, your grass will be at different levels and whatnot, so you don't have a perfectly even cut. It's just, I mean, to the naked eye, you can't really tell the difference, but you can sort of tell the difference. I mean, you can tell it's mowed, you can tell it looks good and it's groomed, but it's not like a gas-powered mower looks after you're done cutting it there, which to me, that's not a big deal. I didn't even want a lawn to begin with. I just got stuck having one. So I mow my lawn about once a week. I pull out my push mower. I spend about 5 or 10 minutes, well, probably about 10 minutes when it's all said and done. Like I said, going over the lawn twice, getting it all cut down. And then I put the push mower away, and it's totally out of the way. My grass is done. I didn't have to go out and buy gas. I didn't have to start up the mower. And then, you know, they always have all these great selling points with those push mowers. Like, you can mow your lawn at 6 in the morning and not annoy your neighbors. So what? I'm not up at 6 in the morning. That's not why I got it. I put my pretty little NRA sticker on there so nobody confuses me for a liberal. So anyway, that's why I got a push mower. So are they're reasonable. I mean, there's definitely a use for those puppies. By golly, you have a small lawn. Get one of them. You don't have a lot of space to store a big gas mower. Get one of them. What the heck? I do have a gas-powered weed eater that I can use to go around and trim the edges of my lawn once I'm all said and done with mowing it. So anyway, getting back to the NBC website, they had this thing about gas mowers. And the website said that gas mowers are more polluting than 1 hour of running a gas mower is more polluting than, and it gave an example. And I was like, huh, I wonder where this information came from. And what kind of vehicles they were using? Were they using a Honda hybrid versus a 1972 gas mower and getting this stat? Or were they using a brand spanking new Briggs & Stratton engine mower of some sort and a run-of-the-mill car? Or, you know, where are these statistics coming from? And I scoured the web trying to find this out. And what I found was something that was really, really interesting. And let me give you an example of things I found on the web. On a website called GetEcoSmart.com, it says, in 1 hour of use, a gas-powered lawnmower creates the same amount of pollution as a car driven for 340 miles. So if you figure a car going 60 miles an hour, driving for 340 miles, that's what, about 5.6 hours of driving. So essentially 1 hour of mower is worth one car driving for 5.6 hours. Or that would be the same as saying 1 hour of one mower is the same as 1 hour of 5.6 cars. So essentially one mower equals 5.5 cars or 5.5 hours of driving one car. So I go to another site, and this one is ChesapeakeBay.net. And they said, running a gas-powered lawnmower for 1 hour equals the emission released from driving your car for 350 miles! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. They're really serious about that one. Okay, let's go on again. This one's from co.sandiego.ca.us, so it's the county of San Diego itself. And they've been working on trying to remove gas-powered lawnmowers and replacing them with like electric models and whatnot. And what they said is removing 500 gas-powered mowers from the county would be equivalent to removing 20,000 cars from the roads. So what they're saying is one lawnmower per 40 cars. That's a lot more than one per five cars. So they... Now, because it's the county, they might be having riding lawnmowers and not push mowers. Now, one of the EPA websites I was at said that a push mower is about equal to four cars, and a riding lawnmower is equal to about 34. So if these were all riding lawnmowers, I could see where they're trying to say it's worth 40 cars. But if it's a push mower they're talking about and they're saying it's worth 40 cars, that is amazing. And you can see how big of a difference it is from one website to another. So you go from 340 miles to 350 miles, which once again is equal to about one car or one lawnmower per 5.5 cars, to one mower versus 40 cars, which is almost seven times bigger than those other stats. Now, you have www.highbeam.com, and it says cutting your lawn with a gas-powered mower for 1 hour generates as much pollution as driving a car for 50 miles. So 50 miles, this one, you could actually argue you are using less by using your mower than you are using a car, because you figure, I guess once again, depending on what you're figuring a car driving at, but if you figure a car even at 55 or 60 miles an hour, which most people figure 60 miles an hour, you've actually, to drive 50 miles, you've gone 50 minutes with a car. And for that amount of pollution, you have to use a lawnmower for 1 hour. So this one, you could actually argue, is saying it's less pollution compared to the other ones. Now, www.motherearthliving.com has this. They say, did you know the average lawnmower emits as much smog-forming pollution as 8 new cars traveling 50 miles an hour, 55 miles an hour? And that is about 400 miles or so, 440 miles of driving your car. So now we've gone from 340 to 350, now to 440 miles. Okay, let's go to www.thatsfit, Mowing.com. It says each hour of mowing is like running your car for 2 to 4 hours in terms of pollution. Well, once again, if you figure 60 miles an hour, 2 hours is about 120 miles, whereas 4 hours is 240 miles. And in both cases, that's a heck of a lot less, 340, 350, 440 hours, 440 miles, excuse me. All right, another one, scienceblog.com. 1 hour of cutting grass equals 100 miles worth of auto pollution. Once again, a much different number. So far, I've not found the same number on any of these sites yet. So you still have to ask yourself a question, where are these stats coming from? www.mge.com, mowing your lawn. For 1 hour with a conventional gasoline-powered lawnmower can cause more air pollution than driving from Madison, Wisconsin, to Chicago, Illinois, in a new car. And I looked that up on Google Maps, and that's 146 miles. So they're saying essentially 1 hour of mowing, 146 miles in a car. www.peoplepoweredmachines.com. A conventional lawnmower pollutes as much in an hour as 40 late-model cars, or as much as driving a car for 100 miles. So they're giving that one per 40, like the city of San, or the county of San Diego was, which was interesting. But what was really interesting is later on that exact same page, they also say a typical 3.5 horsepower gas mower can emit in 1 hour the same amount as a car driven 340 miles. So now we're back to that other figure of 340 miles. So I'm still really curious how 40 cars is one mower hour and 340 miles is one mower hour. These numbers aren't adding up, and that one was on the exact same page. They had two essentially different numbers on the same page. www.vteco.com. 1 hour of operating gas-powered mower generates as much pollution as driving a new car for 11 hours. And if you go for 11 hours at 6 miles an hour, you've gone 660 miles. So now we're up to 660 miles of driving of a car in order to equal to the pollution that a 1 hour of a lawnmower will. www.hgtv.com, like home and garden television. And this one was interesting because they added in a line in here in this statement that actually makes a little bit more sense than a lot of these other people do. They said, after all, a 3.5 horsepower lawnmower, and a couple lines ago I talked about a typical 3.5 horsepower. So here we go. And that 3.5 horsepower emitted the same amount of emitted the same amount of pollution as driving 340 miles. So HGTV says a 3.5 horsepower lawnmower. And here's the caveat here. If it's poorly tuned, will emit the same amount of pollutants in 1 hour as a new car driven 340 miles. So there we go. I think HGTV is probably one of the ones that hasn't put some sort of political spin on it so far, and so far as, and they've even said not just a car, so you're not talking about a 1970 VW van that these hippies drive to their conventions that puts out more pollution than most other vehicles, that my SUV that I'm killing the environment with, and they're in the VW Bug that's smoking black and blue smoke at the same time. So we're talking a lawnmower poorly tuned, so it's running poorly, will do the same amount as a new car driven 340 miles. Well, new cars have such strict exhaust standards on them. Of course, you've got this thing. And so that's actually one that you could almost look at and say, okay, well, that makes some sense. Why aren't these other websites including this information about, oh, the fact that the lawnmower actually has to be poorly tuned? They're not talking about a brand spanking new lawnmower fresh off the lot, ready to go, that's doing this. They're talking about a lawnmower that's poorly working. So let's look at a couple other ones here. www.silencedaily.com. ScienceDaily.com. I might have said silence. Sorry. The air pollution from cutting grass for 1 hour with a gasoline-powered lawnmower is about the same as a 100-mile automobile ride. ThinkProcess.org. Operating gas-powered lawnmowers for 1 hour emits as much pollution as driving a car for 13 hours, according to California Air Resources Board. Now, 13 hours at 60 miles an hour, 780 miles. So we've gone from one source saying 100 miles, another source saying 50, another source saying 780, one saying 660, one saying 340, one saying 350, one saying 440. I mean, where are we going to, where are these figures coming from? Why don't we go, oh, this is, it's funny. So depending on what source you look up and what source you believe, you could be out there spewing information that, oh my goodness, my neighbor used a lawnmower for an hour and that was like driving 780 miles in my car. That's so horrible of him. Well, why don't you look at the other website and say that it was a 50 mile? Well, come on. Last one, Puget Sound Clean Air Energy. So this is one in our old backyard, www.pscleanair.org. Says today's gas-powered lawnmowers emit as much pollution as in 1 hour as driving a newer car 140 miles. So once again, multiple resources out there on the web, and every single one was coming up with different numbers. You really have to wonder where these numbers are coming from. They're trying to tell you that gas-powered lawnmowers are bad. And I won't argue that. I won't argue that because cars do have exhaust systems that have to meet strict standards set up by the federal government, whereas your small engines don't. And they don't have the muffler system. They don't have the exhaust system. They don't have the system set up to burn off some of the bad things like these car engines do. So you are comparing apples to oranges in some ways because you're not comparing two engines that are similar in the way they work. You're not comparing two things in their similarity and how they work. So it's really interesting. NBC's doing that little green kick, and I think it's funny. I think it's silly that they're doing that. I don't know what they're hoping. I don't know what they're hoping to. I don't know what their overall goal is when it's all said and done. I think it's just the whole, well, we did something about the environment. Don't we feel good about ourselves now? So now that I've harped on that long enough, let's take a look at a couple other things here. With the vote coming up here real soon, a lot of different ballot measures are on the ballot, of course. One of them over in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County is Proposition 1. Now, I wouldn't normally talk about the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County because that kind of stuff doesn't typically affect us over here. However, and this will lead into something I'll talk about much later on in the show, there are a lot of people over here at WSU who are actually registered to vote in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, and they're not registered to vote here in Pullman. So, Proposition 1, there's a lot of people talking about it one way or the other. Ron Sims, who's known to be a very liberal person over there in the Reverend Martin Luther King County, he is actually against this Prop 1 as well. They say that Prop 1 will give $7 billion for roads and $10.8 billion for light rail. So, I think as long as the people over there are going to continuously push light rail and continuously push mass transit on everybody over there, we're not going to fix the traffic problems. Their goal is to get everybody out of their cars and driving light rail and mass transit to work and to whatever they need to do every day, building all sorts of condos and apartments in downtown areas near where people work, so they can live there and go shopping there and everything else like that, and they can do everything within walking distance, and they'd only have to use their car once in a while. But it works in so many other cities. Why can't we do it here? Well, we aren't so many other cities. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County is a lot different than a lot of other places. You look at some population densities in some of the big cities that they want to model us after, and it's the problem is that we have the space to allow people to spread out, to have a little bit of elbow room, have a little bit of breathing room, have a little bit of privacy, and people like that. People are willing to pay money to live out a little ways from where they work. They're willing to drive a distance to get to work because they want to have some space. They don't want to be stacked in condos and apartments in big high-rise buildings in downtown areas. They want to live out in the country where, or even in the suburbs where they can have a house with a lawn around it. They want to live in a 300-square-foot place. They don't want to live in an 800-square-foot place for the same amount of money. They want to have these things. And what's wrong with that? Why is it bad that somebody wants to have that? Why is it bad that that's somebody's desire, that that's something that a goal that somebody works towards? There's nothing wrong with that. But while this mass transit push and while this light rail push is happening, more money, as you can see, 10.8 versus 7 billion is going for light rail, mass transit, than it is for roads, cars, things that people actually use every day. So they want to increase taxes enough to pay essentially almost $18 billion to improving roads in order that traffic congestion gets decreased. Now, here's the thing, and this is huge, very huge. Traffic congestion will not, I repeat, traffic congestion will not decrease at all if you vote for this. What it's going to do is it's going to keep traffic congestion at the same level it currently is for a longer period of time. So it's not going to make things quicker. It's not going to open up more lanes of road, which will get people from point A to point B. What it's going to do is it's going to keep up with the current traffic congestion for a longer period of time. So in other words, what they're saying is that if we do nothing, in 20 years from now, a commute of 20 minutes will be a commute of 35 or 40 minutes. And if we do this in 20 years from now, a 20-minute commute will be a 22-minute commute. So by voting for this, you are not going to actually have a decreased commute. A 20-minute commute is not going to drop to a 10-minute commute. It will remain 20 minutes. It will just remain a 20-minute commute for a whole bunch of extra years. So the idea of reducing congestion is sort of, it's sort of fluffy. It's sort of a little bit out there. Really, it's keeping congestion the same for the next 20 years. So, yeah, I guess you could argue it reduced a congestion if you say, okay, let's make two models. In 40 years from now or 20 years from now, Model A, without building all these roads and light rail, we're going to have a 40-minute commute. And Model B, if we do this, we have a 22-minute commute. Therefore, we've reduced congestion. But what people think of when they hear reducing congestion, they think, well, right now I'm stuck in three lanes of traffic all going the same direction really, really slowly. And if we reduce the congestion, it's like driving that same road in off-peak hours where it's less dense with cars and you can go at higher rates of speed. No, that's not what it's doing. So don't get confused and don't get tricked by that. And understand that when you go to vote for it, that King, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County Prop 1 is destined to keep congestion levels the same way for a lot of years to come. So understanding that, you might be a little bit more able to vote on this. And you can actually, there's a website on the Seattle Times page. There's a news article talking about this on the Seattle Times webpage that you can search for it, and this is exactly how the article talked about it. And that was the thing, is that the people who are against Prop 1 did not like the fact that the wording reduced congestion is being used, because really it's not truly reducing today's congestion. It's reducing a theoretical future congestion. So there was that. Now, Let's see here. It's 12:50. I got 10 minutes before we do the top of the hour stuff, and then I'm going to get into, we talked a little bit about the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, and the fact that I brought it up is because we have so many voters here in Pullman who are registered and choose to vote in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, or maybe even Snohomish County or Pierce County, or pretty much the places they're from on the west side of the state. That said, there's something I want to talk about in the next hour that covers this. It's probably going to be pretty controversial, and you might not like to hear what you like what I have to say. But if you don't, I'd love to hear from you. 335-2207. We can chat about it. I'd love to chat with somebody about this who is not agreeing with what I'm going to say in the next hour, because I think it would be interesting to get somebody else's point of view on this. This is one of those things where I think there's a lot of points of view, and I really want to hear other people's points of view when we get into that in the next hour. But for the next couple minutes, what I want to talk about is something more personal to me. Over the intramural season, playing some softball, I would have to say that this year playing softball, okay, first off, softball is life. I mean, that's like the number one priority for me. I have, 10 jobs, give or take, one or two. Some of them are volunteer basis. Some of them are full-time paid basis. The whole gamut of jobs that I run and work every week. But I will do everything I can to get out of each and every one of those jobs in order to play softball. I will take vacation time from work to play softball. Softball is a very important thing to me. And because of that, I play on several different softball teams during the summer. Well, at least two different softball teams during the summer. Plus, I have an intramural team that I play every fall and spring here at WSU. The intramural team, between playing intramural softball in the spring of this last year, so the starting in spring, I played intramural softball, and I went into men's city league, co-ed city league, a couple tournaments along the way, a fall co-ed city league, and fall co-ed softball for intramurals and fall men's softball for intramurals. So over the summer, I figured I played about 50 to 60 softball games, which is quite a few for most people, because if you play just men's city alone, you're going to play about 14 games. So I've played quite a few games, and I'd have to say that my hitting has probably been at the best level it's been in a lot of years. Maybe it's finally at my age, I'm finally starting to realize how to be a good hitter. There's a lot of people that go through that transition from being a power hitter to a person who hits for average, that hits to place the ball. That kid probably still poke it from time to time because I can, but I don't try it. I don't try to swing for the fences. I don't try to crush the ball every time. I look at the field and I say, where is the best spot to get a base hit? Because more times than not, I'm going to help my team a lot more by hitting a single or a double into the gap than I am to be hitting one over the fence, because most leagues limit the number of home runs you can have over the fence anyway. And I might as well save those for the guys who can crush the ball almost on a whim and wait till the bases are loaded, so that way we get the most number of runs for the limited number of home runs you get. So, in other words, getting the biggest bang for our buck. So anyway, there we are playing intramural softball. It's our final couple leagues of the season. I had a men's team and a co-ed team. Well, intramurals did something different this year, and I really applauded them for it. Years ago, intramurals used to have three divisions. They had an A, B, and C division. And when you went to sign up for softball, you chose whether you wanted to be an A division, B division, or C division. A being the most competitive, C being the least competitive. So typically, if you're a brand new team, didn't play softball very well, you went to the C, and those who had been around for a long time and had a lot of really good players went to the A, and those in the middle obviously would go to the B. Well, they went away from that a while back, and they changed to having a competitive league and a recreation league. Well, the problem there is that there is a pretty big gap between a really good competitive team and a really poor competitive team, and a really good rec team and a really bad rec team. In a lot of cases, really good rec teams actually could have beat many of the teams in the competitive division. So what was happening is that you would get teams that would sandbag. In other words, they would play at a league lower than they were actually capable of playing in order to try to win the championship, which in of itself I think is poor sportsmanship. And I think it's an empty victory to me. If you win at a lower level because you went down to play at that level, do you really feel good about your victories? I don't. If I go in there and I fight my rear end off and I win the competitive division, I feel good about myself because that's where we deserved to be. That's where we belonged. My team could go down in the rec division and probably take the whole thing. my team in the competitive division has to fight really hard for some of the victories we get. So that, to me, is where we need to be. We need to be where we are getting challenged, and where when you get challenged, you actually get better. You learn how to hit better. You learn how to play the game better as a team. You learn that taking a walk at a critical time in the game is important. No, very few people like to walk in softball. But sometimes it's something you have to do to help the team in the long run. And when you play in a competitive division and you realize that every runner on the base is big to the team, sometimes you're willing to do what you have to do in order to get those guys on base. You become a better team overall when it's said and done. So even if you are not a very good competitive team, by playing against other competitive teams, you can actually get better. If you're a weight training type of guy, for instance, do you typically lift weight way under what you're normally able to lift, or do you lift weight at the level that you can lift or a little bit heavier and you work on getting bigger muscles? Typically, you're using heavier weights, or you're using a reasonable rate weight for what you can lift and doing a lot of reps. If you're able to bench press 200 pounds, but you go out and you do benches with a 45-pound dumbbell, are you really helping yourself very much in the long run? Yeah, you're gonna get a little bit better, but to expand yourself, you got to use some heavier weights, and you got to increase the number of reps you're doing. I believe it's sort of the same way in softball. To become better, you've got to challenge yourself. You got to really get out there and play against a better team. So, what Intramurals did this year, I think, was really good. They've done this in other sports, and I would not mind seeing them going to an ABC bracket system again and limiting the number of teams that can be in each bracket, so that way when it's full, and other teams, if you got there late, you're going to have to play in an upper division that time or something like that. Because typically what people do is they go to the lower divisions. After last season, intramural softball, the playoffs, essentially they had two nights of competitive softball leagues, and they had a ton of recreational softball leagues. Playoffs for the recreational leagues went about 9 games or so to go all the way to the championship, whereas in the men's competitive, you went about 3 games to the championship. So you can see how big the bracket differences were. So because the disconnect was getting so big, and Intramurals was realizing a lot of these teams should not be playing rec ball anyway, what they decided to do is they were going to split the teams into divisions after the regular season. So everybody, regardless of how good the team was, went all into just an open division. After playing 6 games, they went by records, and they said, okay, the people with like the 6-0, the 5-1s, and some of the 4-2 records are going to be in the competitive bracket. And then those who have like the 4-2 records all the way down to 3-3 records will be in the upper rec bracket. Actually, I think what they did is they did an upper competitive and a lower competitive, and then a rec bracket. So they did upper competitive, lower competitive, and then the people who had like a 2-4 record, a 1-5 record, and an 0-6 record went to the lower, or essentially the rec bracket. And then pretty much all the brackets were equal, so everybody had the same opportunity for playoff time. Well, both of my teams ended up in the lower competitive bracket. My men's team, we lost a couple games during the season. Very well could have won some of them, but just didn't get our timely hitting like we've been accustomed to at times. Our co-ed team honestly should have been in the upper bracket, but we had such a hard time every single week. I struggled to get enough women in there, and we ended up playing in the middle bracket. So in both situations, we're in the middle bracket going into the playoffs. And I will continue this story in a minute. We'll be right back. You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty. Reach me on the phone, 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. You can download audio from all the shows that we've had over the years. If you have comments, questions, or concerns, you can contact our studio at 335-2208 or email gm@kzuu.org. The Whitman County Humane Society is in need of volunteers. Located in Pullman, the shelter is dedicated to caring for stray, abandoned, and abused animals. Opportunities include walking, feeding, and grooming the animals. For more information, call the shelter 509-332-3422 or visit the website www.whitmanpets.org. The dogs and the cats will thank you with their unconditional love. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in on the good times at Neal Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4:30 to 5:15. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocabulary from 5:15 to 6 p.m. And the advanced classes with one-on-one teaching meets at 5:30 to 6:15. Contact Kimi Hiroshi at 509-432-3903 or the Neal Public Library, 509-334-3595. For more information, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Alrighty, so going into the playoffs, both teams were in the middle brackets due to the unfortunate losses with the men's, and due to the fact that we had such a hard time finding women week in and week out, we ended up forfeiting the middle two games. So we went 4-2, but every other game that we played, aside from one, we pretty much crushed the other teams. So because of that, we, like I said, should have been in the upper division, but we unfortunately were not. The season started, or the playoffs started out, and each time we had a co-ed game, it seemed like it was harder and harder to get women. And by the semifinals, essentially the game before the championship game, we were to the point where we were getting women who had never played softball before. One of them, as a matter of fact, was wearing Uggs, which I didn't know what they were up until that game. But I guess Uggs are a very expensive boot. I guess it's a really expensive boot. They're blah, blah, blah. Anyway, she's out there playing in Uggs. And we were playing against a team that really wasn't that great. If we had our normal team out there, we would have crushed them. But with the team that we had out there, the team that we fielded that day very well should have been a rec team. It was it was great that we had them. I was thankful those women played for us. But overall, we just weren't a very strong team. But we went out there and played really hard. We came together and got the necessary hits, and that was one of those games where people, when a walk was necessary, we took the walk. I have to say that the shortstop on the other team really helped us. We were down to our final two outs, and the shortstop went back and made an error on a play, just a little pop-up fell out of his mitt, which extended the inning, and then we just started going together. We started making hits, and then pretty soon we won the game. So it was pretty exciting that set us into the championships. And the championship, we had our normal, really, really, really strong team out there. And we had no problem taking care. We had no problem taking care of the team, and we ended up winning our championship t-shirt. So it was pretty exciting. Went to the intramural offices, got our picture taken, got our t-shirts. I haven't seen it up on the website yet, but I'm sure it'll be up there sooner or later. You can see our beautiful championship softball team for co-ed. Went out there for the men's. We played against this team that every one of those guys could crush it to the fence. I mean, they were bruisers, man. They all hit the crud out of the ball. We, on the other hand, had a couple guys that could hit the crud out of the ball, but the majority of us were more or less base hitter types. And it was a very interesting battle. They would just hit the ball into the gaps and get doubles and triples and that kind of stuff. And we would hit the balls and we were getting a lot of singles. But we battled back and forth. One inning we held them scoreless, which was really big for us. And we battled back and forth. And We go into the final inning. We are home team. They're up by a couple runs. They essentially were up by three runs. They're up by two runs, excuse me. They're up by two runs. We had a guy on first. We had pretty much our best hitter, average-wise, coming to the plate. And right behind him, we had one of our other great hitters, our number four hitter, and a power hitter coming up behind him. So these two guys, essentially, one guy I fully expected to get on the up base. We had another home run to give. We were on the field with the shortest porch. I totally expected him to just crush it out of the park and went on a walk-off home run. Well, unfortunately, the guy, our number three hitter, just rocketed this ball going to right field, which was a huge spot to put the ball. It was a beautiful hit. The second baseman, it went sailing over his head, and he jumped up and just made a great catch on it and brought it in, and we ended up losing the game. And the final out was made by that hit. And, you know, 99 times out of 100, that's going to go into a for a base hit. And it was just the guy just jumped right at the right time. I mean, it was a rocket shot. Everything worked out great for him. So it was unfortunate. And unfortunately, we ended up losing. So that said, I'm going to get into a new subject. I'm going to touch on something I sort of talked about earlier with the Prop 1 and the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County. And what I was saying earlier was a lot of people here at WSU are registered to vote in other counties, namely the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, but there's a few other places as well. A lot of the students, they register when they're back home, and they remain registered the whole time. So first off, Palousatix.com had talked with Nathan Weller and Al Sorensen, both who are running for the Pullman City Council Ward. They agreed to answer questions posed by people who left comments on the Palousatix website. So there were four comments that were left in total. And I left two of them. One was the fact that over the last while, we have talked extensively. All the candidates have talked extensively about Walmart as an issue and more in general, growth of the city of Pullman, big box stores, that kind of stuff, Bishop Boulevard. And talked about extending city services out to Highway 270, the developments they're wanting to do out on 270. All that stuff has been talked about at length. What has not been talked about a lot is other issues. So the first question I had is, I wanted to know what each candidate felt was the biggest issue facing, in this case, Ward 2, which is where they're running for, and what is the goal to help solve this problem. So pretty much, I just wanted to know, hey, what do you think the biggest problem of Ward 2 is, and how are you going to solve it? And I thought that was sort of an interesting or an important question to ask, because as a representative from Ward 2, if you don't know what the biggest problem that they're facing is, how are you going to be able to, I mean, how well in tune are you to the people of Ward 2? And the other question I asked was, and this is the one where if you have comments, I really want to hear from you, because I'd love to have a conversation. You can call 335-2207, 335-2207. And this one is definitely going to be a little bit more controversial because of the way everybody talks about the whole voter, you know, everybody has a right to vote and everybody needs to exercise that right to vote, you know, vote, 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 vote. And I believe that to a point, but I also believe that people who vote need to be educated on what they're voting on. People who don't know what they're voting on and they just willy-nilly vote on things could actually cause more harm than good than if they had just not voted at all. Because if you don't really understand how an issue is going to affect an area and the people that are going to be affected by it, and you vote the wrong way, you know, you're really hurting a lot of people. So I believe that you need to be educated on what you're voting on before you vote on it to begin with. And voting right down party lines a lot of people argue is a bad thing because they're inside of the Democrat Party, there's conservatives and more liberal people, and in the Republican Party, there's more conservative and liberal people. And in some cases, a Democrat might be more conservative on the issues that are important to you than a Republican is. And if you understand who the two candidates are really well, and you look at their voting records and where they are coming from, you might realize that a Democrat, in some cases, could be more important to your key issues than a Republican is. So anyway, the next question that I asked was, and I'll just, I wasn't quite sure exactly how to pose this question, but I said, it's more of a thought that I've had, and you know, I guess I wanted to share it and sort of get their opinions on it. And this is what I'm asking of you too. This is sort of a thought that I have, and I just sort of want to get other people's opinions on it. And I said, in most cases, WSU college students live in Pullman for anywhere from 9 to 12 months each year, and typically they last about 4 to 5 years, depending on their schooling, and then they're out of the area. You know, many of them, obviously, they hold a fond spot in their heart for Pullman. They're not necessarily sad to leave Pullman, referenced by the fact that some people quote the bumper sticker, happiness is seeing Pullman in your rear view mirror, or all dirt roads lead to Pullman, that kind of stuff. So they're not necessarily sad to leave the city. They're just sort of sad to leave this part of their life. You know, some of the people they had in Pullman, things like that. But they're not necessarily sad to leave in order to get back home. Many times there are students who are complaining that the city is cracking down on partying too much, and they're trying to stop the students from having fun. Many students are registered to vote, but they choose to register back in the area where they grew up, not in Pullman. And so my thought is, if the student doesn't feel strongly enough to register or to be registered in Pullman for the time that they're here, then why should the permanent citizens of Pullman give them a voice in the policies that will shape Pullman for years and years and years to come? So in other words, yeah, there are some things that students could vote on that would affect them today, but many of the things they vote on would affect them for years and years and years to come, and they're going to be long gone, and they're not going to really look back at Pullman again. And they're at the point right now where they feel more strongly about the issues back home where they're not living than they feel about the issues in the place where they currently are living. And if that's going to be their point of view on things, why should the city council try to accommodate these people when those people could care less about these accommodations? They want to complain about the way the government works, but they don't want to do anything about it. They don't want to register to vote here because the issues back home, as they say, are more important to them. So my thought is, why should we care then? If they don't care enough to go out of their way to change their address for voting purposes, and if they don't care, and they care more about an area where they have not lived for a couple years, then what say do they have that is going to affect long-term residents, that the long-term residents should even have to be drowned out? So, you know, this sort of, like I said, it's more of a thought than anything. It would be interesting to get other people's points of view on that. And if you do want to chat with that a little bit, 335-2207, give me your point of view, and I'd like to see where other people stand on that. Well, those were two questions that were posed. Another question that was posed for Nathan Weller was, what is your opinion of the League of Women Voters proposal to add another layer of public hearings for new commercial development in Pullman? There was a story in the Pullman Moscow Daily News recently that said the League of Women Voters want to add another round of meetings and discussions before a big project could go through. So all the things that people currently have to go through, they'd still have to go through that. Plus, they'd have to have another step along the way. The League of Women Voters are trying to make it an additional step. And a lot of developers are arguing, and even some local residents are arguing, no, that's not necessary because they already have to do a lot of things. And this one step just costs extra money an extra time in the process of doing a development. And if you look at how long it takes from the time they start planning a development to the actual time ground is broken and the business opens, it's an extraordinary amount of time. Lastly, one other question that was asked was, can we count on you to help get Bishop Boulevard redesigned at the corner by the Fireside Grill? It slopes away from the center of the turn. I am very sure bus drivers and police would like to see your support. Can we count on it? And if you're not familiar with which one Bishop Boulevard is, it's the one he's specifically talking about, the intersection by the movie theater, by the Denny's, the Quality Inn, or the Holiday Inn down there. When you drive that corner, pretty much anybody who drives that corner realizes. Sorry about that. I'm having some issues with our equipment in here. Sorry. Anyway, anybody who drives down Bishop Boulevard knows about that corner right there and how it can be pretty nasty. So this question was to see what people's thoughts were, what the candidates' thoughts were about fixing that corner. Nathan Weller answered the questions, and Al Sorensen answered the same questions. Nathan actually answered them before that last question was posed, so his response is not included in his answers. But I would like to share the answers that he gave. And I'm not going to today put my support behind either one of these guys, mainly because I'm not in Ward 2. I think I know who I'd vote for if I was in Ward 2, but I'm not going to necessarily share my opinion. If you want to share your opinion after we talk about this, or if Batman happens to call in and wants to share his opinions about this, I would love to hear from them, but I'm not going to necessarily share my opinion per se. So Nathan Weller answers the questions. Number one, thanks for asking this question. I think a major issue facing Ward 2 is infrastructure, such as sidewalks and streets. General upkeep, because the ward has some of the older parts of Pullman and some of the heaviest use due to density of residents near campus. I've walked every street in the ward and have carefully noted conditions of the houses, apartments, sidewalks, and streets, and thus have many concerns to bring to City Council. This matter ties into a broader issue of economic development. I am for fiscal responsibility and do not believe in raising taxes. Thus, we must broaden our economic base to find other opinions to generate the funds to pay for these improvements. We must think outside the box to find sources of revenue. All residents in the ward, including students, must be committed to communicating and working together to maintain the cleanliness and quality of our neighborhoods, and voice their thoughts and concerns to City Council to get the resources needed to keep Ward 2 neighborhoods clean and safe and a welcoming place to live. Number two, he says, great question. I think conversations with students can start with this question. But while we must ask this of the students, we must ask ourselves a question as well. Namely, what is our attitude in asking this question? If it is, you don't vote so you don't count, then the whole exercise is a farce. However, if it is, you are an important part of the community and we want your involvement to help better our city as a whole, then we can continue with a combined front to tackle future issues. I think many students see themselves as part of a broader community, and the lack of voting or registration is not a matter of strength of feeling, but a matter of information. Many of the students I talk with vote elsewhere because they are interested in issues in their hometowns. In addition, many do not know how to register in Pullman and usually ask where to get voter registration information. We as a community need to focus on communication and to ensure WSU students know that their voice is welcome in city government and that with rights come responsibility. To help make Pullman a better place to live, work, and attend school, I would like to see more WSU student grads stay in the Pullman area and help build the local economy. All righty. And caller, you're Hello? On the air. How are you doing today? Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hello, are you out? Can you hear me, caller? Let's try this. Caller, you're on the air. Can you hear me? All righty. Well, we have somebody who called in. I'm having a hard time getting them on the air, unfortunately. I might have cut them off. Trying to get them on the air. Unfortunately, it's been a little while since we've last had somebody on the air. And with our transmission difficulties. So maybe if they'll call back, sorry, 335-2207, we'll try that again. Get you on the air here just a second. All righty, caller, are you able to hear me? You know, I'm not able to hear them. I wonder if they can hear me. Hey, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, how are you doing?
Good. I actually can't hear you. I can hear you through the radio.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I've had that problem before where sometimes you can't hear me through the phone, but you can hear me through the radio. So you got to do that little radio listening and phone talking thing. And as long as you don't get the too close to each other, we won't get feedback. So
yeah, I'll try to figure this out.
Okay. Well, if you're able to hear me, cool beans, let's go ahead. And what are your thoughts?
Well, I think when you were talking about it before, you are assuming that students don't want the best for the Pullman citizens. We're not just looking for our own interests. We are interested in the city of Pullman.
Okay. So you're talking on behalf of students then, or at least on behalf of yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of... Now, when you say you want what's best for Pullman, you're talking about in long term, you're hoping that when you leave Pullman, it's a better place than when you came.
Right.
So just out of curiosity, as a student, what kind of things do you see that Pullman could do to improve, and that when you leave, it'd be cool that future students will have the benefit of things that you did?
You know, I really haven't been here that long. I mean, I'm a freshman, so
okay.
I've been here a couple months. But I do want to see... Well, I think you were talking about a Walmart.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think a Walmart is a great idea.
Okay.
I mean, I come from a small town, so I've been affected by a Walmart, and it hasn't been... It's not as bad as everyone makes it seem.
Okay. So, in your small town, there actually was a Walmart?
Yeah. I was there when one, like, first came in.
Okay. Now, let me ask. One of the arguments, of course, about against a Walmart in this area is that it will run all the local businesses out. Did you find that there were some businesses or a lot of businesses that went out of business due to Walmart?
No. We had, like, one grocery store. So, I mean, it didn't really affect them.
Is that grocery store still in existence?
Yes.
Okay. Does the Walmart sell groceries?
Yeah.
Okay. So... The grocery store is still there, and Walmart sells groceries.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're not doing as well as they were before.
Sure. You got competition now. You got to do something a little different.
Exactly.
Okay, so, and that's a very good point, though, that you raise, is that with my premise, I guess you could infer that students don't necessarily aren't thinking about looking out for what's best in Pullman in the long run. Now, I guess where I would sort of wonder what your thoughts are is, if somebody registers to vote in Pullman for the time they're here versus somebody who comes here, remains registered where they came from, but still demands a voice in Pullman, would you see a difference in the two people?
I think that voters that would want a voice in Pullman generally want the best for Pullman and not just themselves. I'm not registered here yet, and I don't know how, so.
You know, that's interesting, because I've actually heard a lot of, both Nathan Weller and I think when I was going to get to Al Sorensen's comments, both of them, I think, said that there's a lot of lack of information about how to mm-hmm. vote or how to get registered, and that's interesting, because I guess in my mind, it's sort of been one of those things. It's like, I just assume everybody knows how.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I came to WSU, they actually had a booth set up where you could register right there up on campus. So it was real easy for me to register. It was the first time I'd ever registered to vote. And, you know, I started voting in Whitman County since then. You know, I know the auditor's office down in Colfax, which probably isn't all that convenient for a lot of students, you can register to vote there. And I believe with the motor voter laws, you can actually register to vote the place where you get your driver's license renewed, mm-hmm. places like that. But honestly, you know, I wish I could tell you four places off the top of my head where I know you can get registered to vote, and I can't. So maybe that's something I could do to educate myself so I could help educate people as well, is where do you go to register to vote? And for students who don't have cars that can't get downtown easily, where can they go on campus to easily register to vote? I would think ASWSU has the forms necessary to fill out to do it. So that would be interesting to start looking into for myself and help with that. But so you're saying that you would consider changing your voting status to a Pullman resident since you're a freshman. You're going to be here for a couple years, so your voice is heard if you knew how to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what kind of when you finish up with WSU, is your plan to go back home where you grew up, or are you going to plan on going wherever the best job market is for your degree path?
Job market. I don't plan on staying in Pullman.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people, obviously, you know, they come here for a school, and when school's done, a lot of people, especially if you're from Seattle, they can go back home and the job market's there. But for some people, if you're from, like you said, you're from a small town, if you want to get into certain jobs, you're not going to really be able to probably go to that town and find that job market again. You're going to have to go to a different place, and that's why I was sort of curious if what your future goal was. So I definitely see where you're coming from. I think that's a good point, and I'm glad to hear that, because I think that is important. That unfortunately, I think sometimes the students who are the most boisterous about things are the ones who make the other ones look bad. For instance, I don't know if you've heard about these drinking regulations and rules, the fighting ordinances that are coming down the pipe from the city council. But a lot of students, I shouldn't say a lot of students, but certain students in the newspapers are being quoted and being sort of vocal against this. And there's groups on Facebook that are really upset about these things, and they believe that the city of Pullman has taken away their right to party, and that the city is really clamping down, and it's not being fair, and we're forgetting why the college is even here, why the students are here, and how the town even exists, and, you know, if we push all the students out and that kind of stuff. And I'm just sort of curious your point of view on that kind of thing. Is do you think those students who are really upset about the partying ordinances and all that kind of things, do you think that they represent the average student at WSU, or do you think they're a minority but they're just vocal?
No, I think they would represent the average student, but I think as students, we're visitors in Pullman. This isn't our town. I think we need to be respectful of the laws that are here. I think it's really silly for us to say college is about partying and that's what we're going to do.
Wow. That's a very interesting comment coming from a student that, you know, that you're visitors here. And that, you know, need to be respectful. Now, I would definitely say that, you know, there's a lot of people that would love to see more college students stick around in Pullman after they're done and become full-time residents and you know, make Pullman become a stronger place. And, you know, I guess my point of view as somebody who lives here all the time, I don't look, you know, when I see a student, I don't see somebody who, you know, I'm grumpy about being here and that they're a visitor or anything like that. You know, I see them as being a resident of Pullman for 4 to 5 years. You know, I definitely respect that feeling that you're a visitor and you want to treat Pullman nicely. I mean, so many people have sort of the same kind of concept that you do, but they have it a different way. They see themselves, they don't live in Pullman all the time. They only live here part of the time. And they treat it like a rental car or a hotel room. I mean, they just trash it and they leave and they don't care. You know, you definitely have a refreshing point of view where you actually do care, and your hope is that when you leave Pullman, it's a better place. And it's interesting because it's I think in some ways the mentality that some of the students are expressing, that the city's taken away their right to party, and that they're upset about it and they want to do something about it. I think those are the kinds of people who are actually causing more harm and are the reason why the Pullman residents are saying something needs to be done, because people can party and people have parties all the time all over the city, not just up on College Hill. But the difference is the ones who are having the parties in a lot of the other places are respectful with the volume of the music They're respectful with the parking. They're respectful with the trash. They're respectful with the drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, they party, they have a good time, but they do it with a little bit of respect and care for their neighbors, whereas some people just don't care. They feel it's like one big party. So that's sort of interesting. I definitely appreciate your call.
Yes. Well, let's have this be a message to all college students to say, let's be respectful and not have every resident that actually lives here all the time hate students.
Well, once again, thank you for the call.
Of course. Have a good day.
All right. Bye. All right. And if you want to weigh in on this, it's 335-2207. And I was just finishing up with what Nathan had to say about the question of should the city listen to the students who are not full-time residents and who choose not to vote and register themselves in Pullman. Now, I just heard from somebody who is new to Pullman and does not know where she can go to register to vote. And I think that'd be very important to start learning, and I think I'm going to take some time to figure that out. I'll talk to my friend in the auditor's office and see what I can figure out. So we got another caller. Caller, you're on the air. How are you doing? Caller? Okay, I meant to say this before I took the call. If you are going to call in, it sounds like you're going to have to listen to your radio to hear what I'm saying, and then you're going to have to talk into the phone. Yeah, you probably hung up on me there. Sorry. So if you're listening right now, when you call in, make sure you listen to the radio to hear me, and you can talk into the phone, because unfortunately I'm not transmitting via the telephone. So once again, caller, you're on the air. How are you doing?
Enter.
No caller yet. All right. We'll try this one more time. Sorry. I promise I'm not usually this bad. I'm rusty. Give me a break here. So anyway, I'll work with the auditor's office. I'll figure out all the places in Pullman that people can register. I'll try to get a hold of ASWSU and find out if they have things set up for WSU students to register to vote here in the city of Pullman. And we'll try this for like the fourth time. Caller, you're on the air. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing, caller? Uh-oh. Yeah, you gotta listen to your radio to be able to hear me and then talk on the telephone, unfortunately, because let me see if I can get them on the actual telephone and let them know that portion, and then we'll come back with them here in a second. So, caller, are you there? Hey, how are you doing? In order for you to be able to hear me, you gotta have your radio on or a stream or something like that going, alrighty? Is that what's going on? Okay, yeah, the stream does tend to get delayed. So I guess if you want to just make a statement, we might not be able to have an interaction, but if you want to make a statement about something, you can do that. Is that okay? All right. Let me give me about 2 seconds and go ahead and just start making your statement, okay? All right, just a second.
All right, I'm going to make my statement now. I was just going to share that, well, certainly it's kind of a complex issue because students aren't, don't always live for more than 4 or 5 years in Pullman. They do constitute about 68% to 72% of the population, at least during the year. So they are the majority. That stats from, there's about 18,000 students, 17,000 to 18,000, depends if you count full time or not, and say 25,000 total people in Pullman. They also don't really use a lot of the services. I mean, most students don't have children. There are obviously some do, single parents and married people that have kids that are students. But I mean, obviously most don't. So they're not using the schools. They're probably not using the hospitals as much. They're not generally, I would imagine, older people to use hospitals. And also that they do pay a lot. They pay property tax indirectly, all those rentals. You know, all taxes get passed on, as you would, I'm sure, say as a conservative Republican. So all taxes do get passed on. So when the property tax goes up, the students are paying that. And so I think that I would like more students to register. And you did hit on an earlier point that a lot of students, they don't realize it. You also have to register 30 days before the election unless you go to the auditor's office, which is kind of hard to do because it's kind of far for a lot of students who don't have cars. So that is kind of a something that needs to be changed on a state level. I mean, you should be able to register the day of the election. I mean, if there's a 5-day waiting period on guns, and the NRA doesn't even want that, I think why there should be a 30-day waiting period to vote. So I think that students and the long-term residents could definitely work together. It shouldn't be like an opposing thing, but students are the majority. And also, I mean, we don't need to be passing ridiculous things like open container and the mutual fighting combat, whatever they called it. Nobody's in favor of people just trashing and smashing things. But let's not cut down on freedom. That is the country. We are a free country, and we should only cut down on freedom when we truly need to seriously protect people. And, yeah, that's about it.
All right. Well, I definitely appreciate the call. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to actually chat with you because it would have been, I think we could have had a fun conversation there. Just to touch on a couple things you said, you mentioned WSU students are by far the majority of the residents of Pullman, and that's a very good point. WSU students, as you said, make up about 18 to 19,000 of the 25 to 26,000 residents of Pullman. That this the taxes that students, essentially every resident or every property owner pays a property tax. And you very well pointed out that if you live in an apartment or a rental house or something like that, that property tax is being paid by the student or whoever lives there. The homeowner himself is not going to absorb that tax happily. They're going to very happily pass it along to the person who's living in that house. So those are some very good points. So students are definitely paying property tax. I was thinking about that as you talked about some of the services. I was like, well, the people who live here full-time typically pay these property taxes, but you definitely did point out a good point that, well, yeah, so do students. They just pay it via the landlord versus paying it directly to the treasurer down at the county auditor or down at the county courthouse. What I would say is that in terms of services, I would argue there probably are certain services that the full-time residents use more often than a student uses. But I think when you look at emergency services, police services, roads, I think the roads and sidewalks and that kind of stuff are used by the students equally as residents. I think the parks are used equally by students and residents. I argue, though, that emergency services are more used by students than by residents. But I don't think it's such a huge distinction that you know, we need to split hairs over that. I think there's definitely, in terms of partying and the rules that the city council is making, I don't necessarily agree with all the rules as well. But of course, if I don't agree with it, I need to make my voice heard. I can talk to my council member, let him know what my thoughts are. I can go to the city council meetings and speak publicly about it. If I dislike it, I think the open container law that they're talking about, or the open container ordinance and the mutual fighting ordinance, I don't think the mutual fight ordinance is going to stop fights from happening. First off, there's not going to be a lot of people that know about it, and secondly, I don't think it's going to stop a fight. If two guys are about to fight and they're going to fight for whatever reason, I don't think they're going to think back and go, oh, geez, I'm going to get a $250 fine for doing this. They're fighting for some reason. I mean, most people know that fighting's not the right thing to do, but they might engage in it anyway. Therefore, knowing that there's this fine waiting for them for doing it is not going to stop them as well. They're also possibly facing jail time, and if that's not going to stop them, you know, the possibility of a Sydney ordinance fine is not going to stop them. And you know, for doing the right thing, if that's not going to stop them, a city ordinance fine is not going to stop them. Now, it's just another level of things that we can do punitively to whoever fought. And I don't think, I mean, you know, obviously students are going to be affected by this, but so will everybody in Pullman. When you look at the one thing, though, that I would say, and the first caller brought up a very good point that, that the students need to be respectful of the city and, you know, try to leave it as a better place than when they came. And I think that's very noble. What I don't like is, and I was going to talk about this at length on another show because I just don't have enough time to cover it today. There's a Facebook group, something about we want to bring the old wazoo back. And in it, they talk about how in 1998, the riots happened to protect our rights to party. And there are a lot of students here today that were probably only about 8 to 12 years old when those riots happened and don't really understand what happened in those riots. And I think it's a shame that they even bring up that information. I think that there's a lot of people who were around at that time that still feel the riots were a black eye on Pullman, on WSU. It was an ugly period of time. And those riots that this Facebook group is touting as so great is part of the reason why some of the things to limit some of the partying are in place. So you are essentially celebrating a time period that caused you today to have regulations on your freedoms to party, the freedoms to associate, the freedoms to have fun. As I said with the first caller, I don't think the new ordinances that the city are putting into place are going to affect anybody's ability to drink. All they're going to affect is the abilities to drink in public places, which I don't have the RCWs in front of me. I can't look it up right now, so I can't quote any RCWs, but I believe in the state of Washington, it's already illegal to openly consume in public. So that ordinance isn't going to stop anything either. Let's see what else we have. Caller, you're on the air.
It's me, Scotty.
Hey, it's Batman himself.
Better late than never.
Hey, that's all right. We had a couple callers on, so I wasn't sure if you're going to be able to get through or not. But so what do we got going on today?
Well, I hear you've been talking about the election.
I have. Now, as a informed local resident, Tom, do you know places in Pullman where students can go to register to vote?
To register to vote or to drop off their ballot?
To register.
I think they can probably register at City Hall.
Okay. I was thinking that, too. City Hall, obviously, Colfax Courthouse in the auditor's office. I believe the motor voter laws that went through, they can register to vote at the Department of Licensing, DOL, not
right,
the DMV,
right.
Which is, I think, I don't know if they have it there, but the DOL, which is down by the, interestingly enough, the liquor store.
Yeah.
Right next door.
Get your fake ID there and then go buy your liquor.
Now, Tom, they don't do that kind of thing. So, anyway, I was talking about the Palousetix article, or the Palousetix, where people ask questions, and we had responses from both Nathan Weller, and I went through both of his responses to my questions, and then we started getting the calls. I didn't get to April's quite yet. And then I read Al's comments this morning on my two questions, and then Ray had asked a question about Bishop Boulevard and whatnot.
Right.
Like I said, I haven't actually covered what Al had said, but anybody can go to www.palousetix.com and read what both of them had to say about it. My question to you, before I give you my opinion on the two responses from Nathan and Al, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of interesting sometimes how freedom seems to be a movable commodity for some people. I find it interesting that a lot of students start complaining about their freedoms being taken away when they talk about open container laws and stuff like that. But yet a lot of students don't seem to have any problem in denying certain people in Pullman the freedom to, say, shop where they'd like to shop. So I think a lot of your crying about freedom depends on how it affects you personally, it seems, in a lot of cases.
Okay. Now, have you had a chance to read what Al had to say? Actually,
yes.
I'm thinking you might have posted it for him. Yeah, you did.
I did.
Okay. So, of course, you've had a chance to read it, and I'm sure you've read what Nathan had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Ray's question came out after Nathan had responded, so I haven't been able to compare Nathan's answer to Ray's answer on this.
Yeah, I don't think actually Nathan has had a chance to answer the question about Bishop yet. So.
Right. Now, in terms of the questions that the two have answered, mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on their responses, their replies to it, and how it makes you feel as far as a voter, and if either of their answers would sway you one way or the other?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, being the blogger behind it, I'm just glad that both of them, you know, took time out of their very busy schedules to, you know, read and answer the questions, and I think that was very commendable, and because really the only coverage we've had so far of, you know, this race has, you know, been what's been reported in the newspaper, and I guess if you had attended the League of Women Voters Pullman Chamber of Commerce debate a couple of weeks ago, that's about it. So,
right.
You know, I was glad to be able to, you know, be able to provide some more information to the voters, and I give credit to both of them. I think they both did a good job answering the questions, and I think they were well thought out responses. And if anyone had any questions, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have already mailed their ballots in, but if they haven't, maybe you know, this will give some people an extra push to go one way or the other, how they're going to vote.
Right. I'm actually not in Ward 2, so I don't really get a vote for
either one
of these guys.
I'm in Ward 1, I think, probably same as you.
Yes, so. Same as you. And
I'm voting for Frances Benjamin.
Are you? As opposed to the empty bubble?
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't really have much of a choice, which, you know.
It's not a bad thing because Frances has been a good councilman, and as well as Keith Bloom and Mayor Johnson. So I'm glad they're going to be coming back for another 4 years.
Sure. And now Al Sorensen is a incumbent, and Nathan Weller is the one who's running against him.
Mm-hmm.
Now these are nonpartisan positions.
Correct.
But Nathan did run last time for a city or a county commissioner position.
Yes.
And I believe at that time he ran under the label of a Democrat.
Right, because the countywide offices are partisan.
Right. And the interesting thing, though, is that after reading Nathan's responses and having, you know, heard some of the other things that he's had to say, he seems to not necessarily go down the line with a typical Democrat. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think at least when it comes to local issues, you know, maybe when you get onto national type issues, Nathan might be more of a conventional Democrat. But certainly, well, and this gets into the whole interesting issue of growth and development anyway, and how that a lot of our local Democrats, Whitman County Democrats, many of the same people in that organization are also members of organizations that are opposed to Walmart and the Hawkins development and things like that. But yet, really, those issues aren't strictly partisan issues. And I know that probably there are many Democrats in Pullman that are in favor of those developments. So it's hard to really say that that's a party issue. But I've met both Nathan and Al and spoken to them extensively during his campaign season, and they're both great guys, and yeah, Nathan shows, you know, the kind of common sense that would be helpful for the Democrats to have here in Whitman County to, you know, maybe have more attitudes like he has, you know, more practical attitudes.
So I think you on your website had already spoken about which way you would vote if you were voting on this issue and everything like that. And
on which issue?
On which council member to vote for.
I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
I could have swore when I was reading your website you had specifically said that if I don't know. Are you sure you didn't say anything?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. Because I'm in Ward 1, and since I'm not voting for anybody, I'm not weighing in.
Okay.
At this time, I may later. I haven't even voted yet. I feel ashamed. I was sick. I was sick quite a bit last week, and so I haven't got a chance to look over my ballot and send it in. But I'll probably post how I ended up voting on some of the issues.
Yeah.
Either today or tomorrow.
Well, let me ask you about. We only have a couple minutes left, and let me ask you about one issue, which you know, I think some of the issues are. A lot of people don't really know exactly which way to go, really. They'll just sort of, whatever, you know, sort of flip a coin and vote whichever way. I don't think they care too much. But one issue I think really could affect things for a lot of years to come statewide is And unfortunately, I don't know exactly what the number of it is. It's the one where the school levies would only need a simple majority versus a supermajority to get passed. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm for leaving the way it is right now.
Okay.
It's been a good system. I'm a little scared if they just make it down to a simple majority. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a 60% requirement, because I think that makes the school district have to go out and really make its case to the voters. And like I said, it's worked well so far here in Pullman and Whitman County. You know, Pullman has school levies. We have another one coming up in February of next year. The voters of Pullman, generally speaking, are very supportive of the school system, but it needs to be explained well, and the people need to see how. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's where the 60% requirement really puts the burden on the school district to do a good job with the levy, makes them more accountable. And Steve McClure of the Daily News had an editorial a few months ago where he basically said the same thing.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the call in, Tom. And
yes, my phone's about dead, so for good timing.
Yeah, and you know, end of the show. I think this was a pretty fun discussion, and it's definitely one that we can continue on some more someday.
Yes.
Had a couple students call in and actually give some of their points of view on the topic, so it was sort of fun to hear what they had to say about it and that kind of stuff. And I'll see about, I'll try to write a little bit about it on the my show's website, www.thepes.com, and sort of talk about what they said. And of course, I'll have the audio posted hopefully later on today. So anyway, I'll be closing out the show here, and I hope everybody has a great week. Have a good one.